everyone. It's Angela Stevens with the podcast Refocus with Angela. And I'm so excited to let you know who our guest is today. You have probably read one of her books. She's so inspiring and such a delightful person that I can't wait for you to know more about her. But today we have Brenda Knight, and you might know her as the author of Random Acts of Kindness. And I think that's all I need to say, but I'm going to tell you a little bit more about her. She began her career at HarperCollins. She worked with luminaries, and I'm going to say this, Paulo Coelho, Marianne Williamson, and Houston Smith. She was awarded Indie Fab's Publisher of the Year in 2014 at the American Library Association. She's the author of Wild Women in Books, The Grateful Table, Be a Good in the World, and Women of the Beat Generation, which won an American Book Award. And she's also, as I said before, the author of Random Acts of Kindness and co-author of You Should Be Writing with Nita Sweeney. She's a poet, she's a writer, she's an editor, and today she's the publisher now for Mango Publishing. So first of all, I could go on and on and on, Brenda, but thank you so much for being on our show.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm very excited to talk to you.
This podcast is all about focusing. And I have a quick question for you right off the bat. So if we have anybody out there that says, you know, I'd like to write a book, or I want to write a book, or I want to write an article for a magazine or something like that, sometimes they can't get started. Give us tips for you on how you focus when you know you've got a deadline for a book or something and you're just not there. What do you do to get focused?
Well, first of all, I assign myself an hour a day to write, and I also assign myself a word count, and the word count is 500, which is not too many and not too small, and also I work in sprints of 20 minutes. Not too long ago, I found out about this focusing methodology by an Italian student, and he calls them pomelos. And he said he actually was like a scientist, and so he had to do like, you know, complicated, you know, work and calculations and deep focus in order to do his work. And he found that he could do it for 20 minutes at a time, and then take a 10-minute break and then go back and do another sprint. You don't have to do the sprints back to back, but like for my writing, I actually do at least two sprints for that hour. And it's calming. First of all, I think that like calming yourself and having a routine is very good for focus. And at a certain point, it felt like a ritual. Like I would literally like look forward to 6 p.m. when I got to do my sprints and my writing, you know, and I would have my writing desk like the way I liked it. That's also very calming and soothing. I would have like a cup of my favorite tea. And then I would just, and instead of being worried or any kind of self-doubt or anything, I would just sort of get centered and then just start. But I understand, and I've also experienced, you know, before I came up with my system, if you will, I understand like fear of the blank page, just fear of getting started. And so you can't let fear of the blank page like get in your way. You literally just have to brush it aside and start writing. Like, what is in your mind, write it down, even if it seems like maybe it's kind of dumb, or it's definitely not profound, or it's not good enough for your project or article or whatever. Just start writing, and then actually that will sort of prime the creative pump, and then you'll be able to write about what you're planning to write about.
I love that. So I just made a couple of notes on that. So first of all, is there a time of day that works for you? It may not work for someone else, but what time of day works for you?
Yes. So as you know, I have my day job, which I love, like being publisher. So there's lots of editing, lots of author communication, lots of emails. And so 6 p.m. is like my sacred writing time. And, you know, I call it sacred writing time because like I told you, like pretty quickly it became a ritual where it just had this really special feeling. Like it was just for me time, you know, just me. So 6 p.m., 6 to 7, but if it's a little less and I get in 20-minute sprints, so if it's there's at least 40 minutes of really good writing time, then that's good enough. And again, you know, there's times when, you know, I think like, oh, wow, what, you know, I like, what am I even going to write about today? Like, you know, I might've had a rough day or whatever, you know, a difficult contract negotiation with an agent from New York or something, like, you know, that can set things up for like a rough day. So I might not be in the mental state, but like when this is an important tip too. My work desk is different from my sacred writing desk. I have two desks in my house.
I was going to ask you about that. Like, give us a picture of what your desk looks like, because I know I would love to know that as well.
Yes, yes. So, you know, I used to go to an office, you know, obviously then the pandemic, you know, changed that for so many people, including me. So I had to like turn, you know, my living room into a home office, but it feels comfortable and it's nice enough for, you know, has a formality to it that feels right for work. So my writing desk is in my bedroom. And I think the most important thing about that is that it's because it's by a window where I can look out into the garden, and being able to look out at the garden, which is like very contemplative and soothing and pretty. And I can even like sort of, you know, look at some plants and like sort of see what's going on with those plants. Are they ready to bloom? Are those roses, you know, fading, like, you know, and that actually helps my creative process.
I have a question. Is your desk totally clean and nothing on it?
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
I had a vision of that, of what it might be like, because, you know, I have ADHD. My son has ADHD. And I remember even with him, everything had to go on, you know, because it would be distracting to him. Mm-hmm. And so I have a feeling the same way with you, or maybe not distracting, but you're trying to do what you're supposed to do there.
Exactly. And my work desk is different because, like, you know, I have stacks of books and some paperwork. I mean, I never allow things to get messy, because messiness it negatively impacts my focus.
So like people with ADHD were like going, okay, we're in big trouble right there. No, I'm just kidding.
I mean, it's not like super, super, super tidy, you know, because stacks of books and manuscripts and things like that by nature can't be, but it's like orderly stacks. What I was trying to say is that my work desk is not like a zen space, because, like, you know, there's just a lot going on, but the writing desk for my personal writing has to be very zen like.
I love that. So I've got several questions about that. So if somebody is writing a book, let's say a book.
Yes.
Do they start in the middle? Do they start in the front? Do they the end? Or is there any methodology that you recommend for people? Because I know some people are going to be really interested in that answer.
Oh, yes. Yes. I have many thoughts about that. And I recommend, in fact, I was just going over this with an author yesterday who was writing something new for her. So so it's important to just write a section, a chunk. I just call it a chunk. It could be 500 words. It could be 2000 words. It could be more, but it's important to get like what you're thinking out of your head and like onto paper, or, you know, onto a Microsoft Word file. And then like that has sort of primed your creative pump. But then the very next thing you need to do is create the structure upon which the book hangs. And this is more true for nonfiction than it is fiction, but I'll get to that fiction in a moment. that like the table of contents is like the rebar upon which you're building the house, you know, and the book is the house, and the structure is really, really important. And your first table of contents might not be the final table of contents, but it helps you organize. And then once you have the table of contents, maybe you write like the second chapter first, because that's the one you have the most juice about. So you don't have to write them in order, like, you know, 1 through 8 or 1 through 10. And when I'm writing books, like I might be writing, you know, chapters 2, 3, and 4, like chunks of them. And then this is a really important tip, especially for nonfiction, like self-help books or personal growth or anything like that. Don't write the introduction until you've written the book, because you can't really introduce the book until you've written it. So you might write a chunk of the introduction, but you can't write the whole thing until you've written the whole thing.
Right. And you said fiction versus nonfiction. Is there a difference of how you should go about that?
There is, because you a novel might not have chapters as such, but it might have like sort of episodes. So with fiction, I think you do have to write it in order. A table of contents as such isn't going to be your guide, but you have to like sort of map the book out. You have to sort of storyboard the book. So it's an extremely similar process.
Yes, definitely. So it's interesting. So we sent an email out to some of our listeners, and I told them you were going to be coming on our show and asked them if they had any questions. And I bet I've got 20 that came in to say, how do we get the attention of a publisher to consider our book? And how do you go about that? And I think a lot of these were people that have never done that before, but they're trying to get their book out there. And tell us, you know, your thoughts on that, because you've been the writer and now you're the publisher, right? So you've seen both sides of it. So I think you're the perfect person to ask that question to.
Yes. Well, whether it's fiction or nonfiction, it helps to have created yourself a platform. So for example, you know, you have created yourself a fantastic platform with your business, but this podcast, because it's something that it's a way for people to see you regularly. It's a growing in popularity. You're marketing it on social media. And so all of that is drawing attention to your work. So if writers do that, whether it's fiction or nonfiction, like do something to like be marketing yourself, and that will really make a difference, because nowadays, like, you know, book publishers and books, like we're competing like with like, you know, hundreds and hundreds of like TV channels and podcasts and movies and just like and social media. You know, there's a lot of competition. So how can you rise above like the noise? Like, how can you get yourself noticed? So if a would-be author and writer can get that step going, and actually nowadays, I would say start TikToking, because you're probably reading in the paper that there's many self-published authors that like were, you know, selling, you know, maybe just dozens of their books instead of hundreds or thousands. And then they went on TikTok and like started talking about their books, their novels, their projects, and they went viral and got the attention of, you know, millions of people, and then, you know, became bestsellers. And now publishers are like saying, please, will you consider publishing with us? So I would say, you know, even if you're 82 years old and you think like TikTok sounds like a lot of trouble, like it's not. I think it's very worth it. So I would say that might like be the fastest way to build your platform.
That's great. You know, it's interesting. I ran into a couple of people that were older, and we were doing an event at Staples, and they came up to me and they said, I'd love to listen to a podcast, but honestly, I don't know how to listen to a podcast. So I said, what's interesting is I said, our second episode is how to listen to a podcast. And we literally, I went to my producer and said, that's the first episode I wanted to do because I know there's a lot of people that don't know. And so, but being older, it's never too late, right? To write a book or to write an article, it's never too late. And sometimes when you're older, you've got more time, right? And so now getting the motivation to do it, that's part of it. But tell us a couple things. What are publishers looking for today in today's world? I mean, has it changed or are there any certain topics that they're looking for if anyone's interested? That was the other question that we had.
Yes. You know, I have to pay attention to the industry. And so I was meeting with, it's, in order to do my job properly. So I was checking with, meeting with some Barnes & Noble folks. And they said, in part, this was brought about by TikTok and BookTok, which is like a type of TikTok. But like romance is is really, really popular. Then they said romanticy, which is sort of like fantasy romance. Horror, which I have to say, I'm personally not that into, although I know so many people are, but like those are like the hot categories for that they're looking for. And that means that publishers are looking for them too, including me. But as you could tell by my bio and, for the books I've written, I love like self-help and nonfiction and inspiration.
Me too.
Yeah, I just love those kind of books. Those are my happy plays. So I'm personally always looking for that. There's some perennial topics like women and self-esteem, children and self-esteem, teens and self-esteem. But I am really, really open. And I love that I get to learn, in my job, like all the time, because like I'm reading my author's books and learning. And so I'm very, Mango and I are like very open. I mean, I also like books on like crafting and cooking and gardening. I just yesterday got a proposal from a birder, I'm very open because anything that will engage people, and especially books that will, give people tools to improve their lives, like those are important books. So
that's what we're all about. I love that. I love that.
Yeah.
So tell me something. People that write books, they can actually be turned into movies and film, right?
Yes. Yes, and that happened with some of those TikTokers, like, a self-published, woman that like, nobody had heard of her. And then she started TikToking and BookTalking. And now there's like, she has a major movie that's going to be coming out. And I love those stories. Like that's really inspirational to me, like sort of DIYing your way to fame.
Yeah, exactly. So another person wrote in, and this is a very hot topic right now. And they said, how is AI impacting the writing and the publishing industry right now?
Yes. So I would say that this early spring, people have been all a Twitter about it, including me and Mango. I felt like this worry, maybe I watched too many Terminator movies or something like that. My best friend works at Google and she writes code and she's been using AI like for years because Google has their own proprietary AI. And she just sort of uses it to like sort of check her code. Like it's not originating anything. So she just uses it sort of as like, a copy editor almost, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right.
But I will say that we don't want our author's work, their writing, their original content, their intellectual property out there, just out there in the wilderness being mm-hmm. used.
Yeah.
That's not right. That's a big fear for me. So we actually added to our contract that like none of our authors' content can be used in that way. And then I'm very happy to report that the Authors Guild, which is, you know, they're like legal and, you know, I guess publishing and writing mavens that are there to protect the intellectual property and rights, including legal rights of writers and authors. They're really getting ahead of it and like doing a great job of being protective. So, I mean, I know it's sort of exciting and new and what does it really mean? And like, but like, I think it pays to be, you know, protective of your work, of your intellectual property, of your originality, of your creativity. So like I'm on very much on the side of writers and like, you know, so anyway, we're trying to, stay ahead of it. And if any writer is confused or like fearful, which, you know, I can understand being fearful about it because it's sort of an unknown. It's like, what's happening? But like the writers go to the Writers Guild and see what they're doing and they would be able to help you.
Right. So I have a friend, it's a family friend of mine. It's not me, but a family friend of mine who a long time ago, she took a class in writing and I was so proud of her, but she got a lot of criticism and she never went back. And I always told her, I always said, you know, listen, I said, that is just a few people out of millions. And instead of, I said, that's really too bad because instead of being helpful and trying to help you, they were criticizing you or cutting your work down. So what would you say to people like that, that may have had that happen to them?
Yes, I have seen that happen too. And here's the thing, when you ask people to like, you know, the same is for artists, you know, too, like their paintings or whatever it is, like, you know, there's like a feedback loop where people are supposed to give you crit, short for criticism. And like, when you ask people to criticize, they're going to do that. I mean, I'm not saying that she asked for that. I'm saying that the structure of the class, that was how the class was structured. So and that really breaks my heart because like, she might've had like something really brilliant, but like people thought it was their job or their duty to like, give like, you know, real and then probably in some cases a really harsh criticism, so that turned her right off. So I would say for if you think that might turn you off and shut you down, turn instead to a book coach. There's many book coaches that are.
I've never heard of that. That's a great idea.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like for example, many people that worked in publishing, they retire out, or if they work for like a New York publishing house, Big Five, they might've gotten, you know, laid off in a wave of layoffs. And then what are you going to do? They might have extremely good skills like editing and developmental editing. And they're perfect for book coaches. And there's a book coach in San Francisco, Michael Larson, who started the San Francisco Writers Conference. And he was like a legendary agent, and he's publishing acts of kindness, like, because he will give a free coaching session to anyone. He gives good strong feedback. He might say like, you're heading off in the wrong direction here, I suggest maybe you try this. But so it's gentle and constructive and not mean-spirited at all. And so a book coach might be the first place to turn before you expose your, you know, tender new writings to like, you know, 30 people who think they need to like be harsh.
Right. And, you know, the thing is, you're always going to get criticism even after you publish your book. So yes. You got to have a little bit of tough skin. But and it was a long time ago, but I just remember that. And I thought, I knew you would have the answer because I think you and I have the same heart. And it broke my heart because I'm always about encouraging people. And I was always on her to go back. the other thing I want to ask you about that is there are ghostwriters too, right? And we hear that word, right? Can you explain that to our audience, what that is?
Yes, I can, because like I am in the process of acquiring a book where the writer, the author isn't like, she's a mountain climber. And so she's in fact, like a champion female mountain climber, and, you know, which is extremely, extremely arduous and also very time consuming. And so that's her superpower, one of her superpowers, and writing isn't yet one of her superpowers. So she engaged a ghostwriter. And I think that like she, you know, was interviewed and like made tapes, and then the ghostwriter, like, you know, transcribed and then like rewrote it. And like, it flows so beautifully. It's like really strong writing. And I was just sort of marveling about how well that went. So that's just a perfect pairing from somebody who has a fantastic story, and then somebody who can take that story and get it onto the page so that it sings off the page. Yeah. And so, yeah, that can, if you've got a great story, but for whatever reason, you know, you need to be, you're busy climbing mountains or whatever it is, you know, like that's a good option. And I've seen, there's many bestsellers that like, you know, and sometimes you even see the ghostwriter credited. So they're not such a ghost. It might be, you know, famous person with not famous person who, you know, was the writer of their story.
Yeah, that's very interesting.
I like to see that when the writer is credited. That feels fair to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So, well, first of all, I could sit here and talk to you all day long. I am so inspired by you. I'm inspired by what you do. So I have two questions left for you. One of those is, first of all, random acts of kindness. Where did that inspiration come from, and what was it that made you want to write that book?
Well, this, I'm going to give you a counterintuitive answer. I'm originally from West Virginia. A lot of people think my accent is Texas or something, but I'm a West Virginian who moved to California. But like my mom, like belonged to this really tiny, like evangelical church, First day Christian Advent, and like I remember like as a child thinking like, ooh, I worry that our religion is too boring. That it really was just about being a good person. That like that's how you're going to get to heaven. It's just like basically like acts of goodness and kindness. And so that was imprinted on me as like a little kid. So then when I moved to California, you know, after being here for some decades, there was this woman that wrote, do random acts of kindness and foolish acts of beauty. And she wrote it on like a napkin. Like, I guess it must've been like a very firm napkin, but she was also an artist. And so she had colored pens and like made it a beautiful piece of art. And she stuck it on like a cafe, like little, you know, billboard where people put their, you know, like business cards and things like that. And like, it became like this sort of like, this is in the 90s too. Like it became like, it went viral pre-social media. It went real old school viral. And so like that, like then it became a bumper sticker. And then people started doing, you know, random acts of kindness, like, you know, paying the toll for in front of a bridge for somebody, or putting a quarter in their parking meter because they were about to get a ticket, or buying coffee for the person behind you, or just little acts of kindness. And so that combination is the, you know, the backstory to random acts of kindness.
I love that. So I said three questions. I'm actually adding one here. Do you have a favorite acts of kindness that out of your books that you feel like is really meant a lot to you, or that you love more than others? Is there anyone that pops out to you?
There is. You seem to know exactly the questions to ask me. I feel like we're really in tune.
We're soul sisters. We are. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was having like a little like tea party on a weekend at my house in San Francisco. And I commuted from Berkeley to San Francisco, or from San Francisco to Berkeley, and then back every day. But for my little tea party, I bought really fancy cookies, like just beautiful, like iced cookies, and like really fancy little napkins, because it was a girlfriend party. And like, it had like, you know, sassy sayings from like, you know, cool women, like on the pretty napkins. And so I was driving to my house, and traffic was really bad coming off the bridge. And I was like stuck, like in downtown San Francisco, like, you know, just inching along, you know. And so I saw this woman like in my peripheral vision to the left, standing on like a berm. And she had her little son. And like, I could tell that like they were, I just somehow knew that like they were running away from a bad situation at home. And then I looked at her more closely. She was actually like very pretty. And like, she had like a big bruise on her face. And I thought, oh, she's escaping an abusive situation at home or something with her kid. And like, I only had $5 like on me, because I'd spent everything on like the fancy cookies and napkins. And so I thought, oh, I have to give her the money. And then I just decided I was going to give her my $5, the fancy cookies and the napkins.
Oh,
and
my goodness.
She was so surprised. And then like, and I just said, everything's going to be okay. You're going to be great. Like, just everything's going to be okay. You know, take good care. And I drove away and I looked in the rearview mirror, and I could see that she was feeding like her little boy one of the cookies, and like he was dancing around. And then I just sort of thought, I'm so glad I brought those napkins, because the napkins are going to remind her that she's fabulous.
Absolutely. I love that story. That is, and you know, I always say, right, in this company, we all get so busy that sometimes we need to stop, take a moment and refocus. And sometimes mm-hmm. we're like going, if we're at the grocery store and we're running, and we might see a situation like that and we don't do things, right? So yeah. I think it's really great. I love that you wrote that book. I just love it. So, and by the way, you have a new Random Act of Kindness out now that they can get on everywhere, I'm sure, right? Okay, yeah. So perfect. Last question, my friend. We always ask people on this podcast at the end, we always say, you know, you've got to have off days, right? And I'm sure you do as a writer as well. But when you get in your car and you have one of those off days and you're going to something really important, what is the song or the genre or the name of the artist that you listen to when you need game on?
Electronica. And I find it very good for mental work. I feel like listening to electronica makes me smarter, and I'm not kidding. And specifically Kraftwerk, like, who've been around for like decades, but there's something about like their album Computer World that just has the right like beats, and like, I just feel like I'm cooking with gas now. I'm listening to electronica. I'm getting smarter. Yes, I can do it.
I can't wait. I'm driving this afternoon. I cannot wait to put that on and listen to it. So Brenda Knight, you know, author of Random Acts of Kindness and publisher at Mango Publishing, thank you so much for your time today. I graciously appreciate it. I feel like we've learned so much more about you, and more importantly, you've inspired others by answering some of the questions. And maybe, just maybe, we've inspired a few people to write that book or to send it in. So thank you so much.
Oh, I loved it. It was my pleasure. What a great way to start my day. Thank you.
Today's podcast is sponsored by Refocus, the creative office. If you're looking for focus products, check us out at time2refocus.com. If you are a new customer, you can use the code MC20 to get 20% off your first order. We have password books, calendars, anxiety journals, and more. So check us out. But I've got something really exciting to let you know today. We have one of our customers is Haidao International. And if you have ever struggled with chronic chronic pain. Many of you know I have neurogenic thoracic outlet syndrome, and it's nerve pain. And no one knows I have it, but I manage my pain. I don't let my pain manage me. And one of the products that I personally use is Hidal. If you've ever heard of a TENS unit, that they're like pads that go on your skin attached to a device, and it can be tapping, rolling, needling, just all different kinds of different ways to get relief. It's amazing. I found them when I was at a trade show in New York, and I asked them some time ago for a discount for our customers, and they gave us one. I went back to them and said, can you do more? And they did. So I'm so excited to let you know that you're going to get 25% off your order if you use the code. It's so easy. Thank you very much, Hidal. It's time to the number two, refocus. So time to refocus. If you put that in the coupon code, you will get 25% off your order. And also, we've got a link that will work, and it will go directly to that. But again, if you struggle with chronic pain, just listen to me. Take it from me. I use it every day. If you're looking for a product or a gift for someone that struggles with chronic pain, get this form. It'll be the best thing that they've ever received from you. But no matter what you're going through, don't forget to stop, take a moment, and refocus.